out, everybody.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to Lights Out. I'm Josh.
I'm Ian.
And I'm Daniel.
And we are back here in our temporary home, which I'm starting to hate.
Yeah, it's kind of getting on all of our nerves a little bit.
It is. It's we're splitting this set with multiple podcasts, and it's a big pain to have to reset it every week and reset the lighting and reset the cameras and reset the props. But the good news is that the Lights Out Studio is underway. We've made some good progress. It is a black hole that we'll be moving into.
Mm-hmm. It looks huge when you walk into it now.
Yeah, it's gonna make this room feel tiny.
Mm-hmm.
Once we get in there. Yeah, it's gonna be so much bigger and better than before. And I've just started ordering furniture. We've got the new table. It's gonna be a whole new setup. It's gonna be beautiful. It's gonna have a whole new vibe to it. I'm very excited, and I'm hoping we will be in there in the next month. So I'm pushing for 4 weeks from now.
Yes.
We will be in the
studio. I believe in us. Why not?
We'll get there. Yeah. We'll get there. It's going to be awesome. I can't wait to unveil that to you all. But in the meantime, we are here, and today we're going to be talking about something that I think is a primal fear instilled in all of us. Being trapped underwater, for one, but being trapped underwater in a cave.
It's a double whammy. You know, I think, like, we've covered, since I've joined, you know, we've covered the paranormal, a lot of horrific crimes, but I think this one becomes nightmare fuel in a way that nothing else can really touch.
No, it's totally different, and it's something that ever since I discovered, like, the Nutty Putty cave disaster,
yes,
which is kind of the infamous American cave disaster, which we'll touch on in this episode for those that haven't heard of that, I've just been petrified. I you know, had a great fear of the ocean just in general for a while, until I started going to it and spent time in it, and fear of sharks for a while, which that's come down a little bit.
Not a lot of sharks out there.
But I still get headlines for all of the shark attacks that are going
on. You got the Google alert?
I have a Google alert set up for it. And there's a lot of shark attacks going on right now across the world. But this particular cave is nicknamed the Shark Cave, and it's in the Maldives. And the reason it's nicknamed the Shark Cave is, A, trying to keep people out of it.
Right.
So give it a name like the Shark Cave, but also because it's a known location, which it's like 150 feet down underneath the surface of the water. It's a known location where tiger sharks like to hang out.
Which, that's a bad shark.
Tiger sharks don't fuck around.
No, and they're fast too.
They're fast, they're aggressive, and they're big. And so there's tiger sharks hanging out. There's nurse sharks, which those are the nice ones.
They're chill. They're chill.
I mean, they still don't look chill.
No, they look like missiles.
They look like they can still take your arm off, but it's this cavern that exists. There's multi chambers underneath the surface of the ocean there in the Maldives. And five Italian divers went down there because they were on a research mission,
right,
to take a look at coral. And what's interesting about this disaster is that we don't fully know why they went into this cave in the first place, because once you get past the first chamber, there's three different chambers, all light ceases to exist.
It's a black hole.
It's a black hole underwater. And so it's like, well, if they're going under there to, you know, research coral, like, why would they go so far into it? And that's
right,
still a question that hasn't been answered. This disaster took the lives of five experienced Italian scientists, mm-hmm, and divers, and one Maldivian military diver as well. So six people died in this disaster that took place in May of this year.
Just now, like, really? Yeah,
literally just happened weeks ago. It's terrifying. And, you know, I think it's something that we're all afraid of, is being trapped in the pitch dark underwater, running out of air.
With sharks.
With sharks, potentially. So let's go ahead and get into it, because this one's absolutely insane. So the Maldives, beautiful, beautiful place. Definitely on my bucket list. It's just really far from the U.S.
Really far. But look at that water. I mean, that's the bluest blue you can get.
It doesn't get much better when it comes to an ocean destination.
Absolutely.
A beach. I mean, the water, the overwater bungalows is kind of like
Oh.
What they're famous for.
The selling point.
So beautiful. But the Maldives is a small island country in the Indian Ocean, and it just sits out there on its own in the middle of the open water. It's made up of almost 2,000 tiny coral islands that stretch for hundreds of miles in every direction. And those islands are grouped into 26 natural atolls. Or, another word for this, ring-shaped coral reefs that help shield the country from massive waves and flooding. So it's kind of protected by all these atolls. And most of the islands are only a few feet above sea level. So you're basically standing just above the surface of this bright turquoise water, no matter where you are in the Maldives. And from a distance, it really does look like the ultimate getaway spot. Beautiful.
I mean, the water looks like a gem.
Yeah, it's like a bathtub.
Yeah.
But more pretty.
Way more pretty, especially my bathtub.
With tons of coral reef and marine life, I mean, it's absolutely stunning. And it's famous for high-end tourism and perfectly curated ocean experiences. And it's marketed as this total paradise. Crystal clear water, luxury resorts, overwater villas, and some of the best diving spots on the planet. Every year, well over 2 million tourists fly in and out from the Maldives to see it. And as adventure tourism has really blown up, especially in recent years, the Maldives has started offering more intense marine activities, things like shark diving. Did you guys ever go shark diving?
You know, if I'm with a guy who's gone shark diving 10,000 times, I'll go shark diving.
You trust him?
If he's done it 10,000 times.
10,000?
The Malcolm Gladwell number, the 10,000.
I don't know if I'd go shark diving in open water. I might do the cage.
Yeah.
I might do the cage where I could hop out real quick onto the boat if things get sketchy. But I see these people that go and just free swim with loads and loads of sharks, tiger sharks.
And they're hugging them.
Yeah. And they're just like bopping them on the nose and turning them away. I'm like, oh my God, if I was underwater and a shark was coming straight at me, I don't know how I would keep calm.
I think there would be a little bit of pee.
Yeah, I think there'd be a little bit of pee and a little bit of hyperventilating.
Yeah.
Which is something you definitely don't want to do scuba diving. It's incredible that people are brave enough to do that. I mean, I don't know if I could ever do it.
I'd need to be handheld, but I'd do it. I'd be interested.
I'd do it with nurse sharks.
Oh, for sure.
In shallow water, you know. Where, you know, I would swim with some stingrays and stuff like that, but I don't know if I'd get into deep water with some big ass sharks. I just don't think I'd do it.
Let them clean your toes a little bit.
Yeah, no, thank you. I'll pass. But yeah, these activities are becoming more and more popular. There's lots of diving excursions, you know, and there's these guided technical dives where you can go cave diving. And in Mexico, they have, in the cenotes, they have some cave diving opportunities there, which that's the closest I've ever gotten to cave diving is snorkeling in a cenote where you swim into it and then you look underwater and you can see the visibility is amazing, but you can see all these underwater caves and caverns. I remember the last time I was in Mexico, like with my little snorkel mask on swimming and I'm like, oh, this is nice. And then seeing a group of scuba divers going it down into one of the caves.
Yeah,
I was
good on that.
I just don't think I want to do that. The claustrophobia alone.
I mean, it's a reverse birth. I don't want to crawl back inside anything.
That's a good way to put it, reverse birth. There's just something about, there's so many fears unlocked there. There's the darkness, there's the claustrophobia, there's the being underwater aspect of it.
Yeah, no.
And on a limited air supply, I'm good.
I can see like the video game counter of your oxygen going down.
Yeah.
Like,
no. Like Subnautica or something like that. My God. I'd rather be in the shallow water, snorkeling the reefs, and hanging out at the overwater bungalows.
Oh, for sure.
All day long.
Get a damn pina colada.
Mm. Dude, don't even. Frozen?
Mm. Oh, my God.
A frozen pina colada over the ocean in one of those hammocks. That's where I want to be right now. But this country has become a favorite for people who want both luxury and that once-in-a-lifetime story to tell. Because, yeah, you can just be like me and float in the calm, warm water and feel like you're in a dream. But what most people don't realize is that underneath all that beauty, the Maldives hides a maze of dangerous underwater environments that do not care how much you paid for your trip, how many miles you expended to get there. It is an unforgiving environment. And many travelers who sign up for these extreme ocean activities just have no idea how quickly things can go wrong. In the last 6 years, more than 100 tourists have died in marine-related accidents in the Maldives. That's something they don't tell you on the tourist brochure.
No. They're not advertising like, yeah, well, this guy, you know, he took his, it's over for him now.
And most of them were drowned.
I'm sure.
So for a place that tries to capture this essence of peace and luxury and paradise, there's a lot of death going on. There's a lot of dangerous activities being had. But those deaths have started to raise some serious questions about how safe these experiences actually are and how tightly the operators are watched. Because that's the thing, too, that a lot of us just don't even think about when we go on vacation and go on these excursions, is that we've just trusted that they've already been vetted and
right,
their paperwork's up to date, that they actually know what they're doing. And oftentimes that's not the case, even through the resorts.
I mean, I remember like one of the first cases I worked on for Mile Higher had to do with the fact that they hadn't checked these jet skis in years and have done absolutely no operating costs on them for decades, really, at that point.
Yeah, and you just realize that. And I mean, that could happen here in the States. That could
absolutely
happen in any country, really. I mean, it's because it's kind of up to the owners, the operators themselves, to keep things, you know, up to snuff. But sometimes they just don't. And in other countries, it's maybe there's lax laws and there's really nobody looking over their shoulder to make sure that they're up to date. So you could be embarking on an excursion with somebody who is either brand new to it, or just claims that they have this paperwork, and you really have no idea.
You have no idea because it's not a problem until it is a problem.
Right. And nobody expects a dream vacation to an island paradise to turn into a story about bodies being pulled from the water. And of course, social media throws gasoline on it too, and people just want the wildest shot, the craziest clip. I mean,
yes,
we're all driven by social media, and you know, we all watch these clips of people with these crazy shots that they got. Like that's why I brought up the divers with the sharks, is, you know, there's whole accounts that are just people diving,
doing insane shit,
or paragliding, or right, you know, doing all these different extreme activities while on vacation. I mean, it's crazy to think that just getting on the plane is not the most dangerous thing you're going to take part in.
It's a bit insane that, like, you know, we know how new airplanes are, and yet now, we're taking that part for granted. You want to go hang out with sharks right now? We got you on that.
It's just something, it's just interesting how most of us don't think about that. I think every now and then the thought crosses my mind like, oh, I'm getting on a plane.
I shouldn't be up here.
Or we'll be at, you know, 34,000 feet in the sky. And I'll be like, we're at 34,000 feet in the sky. Like if I could see below my feet right now, I'd be freaking out.
I'd be freaking out.
But oftentimes that's not the case. You know, what can actually kill you is where you're going to, the destination, the activities you'll take part in. But countries with big ocean tourism scenes aggressively market these intense experiences now because they grab attention online. I mean, it's all about shock and awe. And in the middle of that push, cave diving has become a secret obsession for thrill seekers because I can't think of a much more thrill-seeking type of adventure than going cave diving.
Because you're looking at certain death almost. Like you're staring it in the face. You're like, I can conquer that.
Well, you're going somewhere that few people have gone. If you're
right,
in the grand scheme of things, like the general population has not ventured below the surface of the ocean.
Absolutely.
In this way, or explored these underwater caves where very little human life has ever been. So I think it's also that it's the exclusivity of it. It's the, I'm going somewhere where very few people have been,
right,
that drives people to want to do it. And yeah, most travel companies do not include it in their brochures, you know, the risks, the dangers, and, you know, how experienced you really need to be, what certifications you need to have. So when cave dives go bad, they usually go very bad. But still, people trust the guides, their training, and the ocean's promise that maybe they'll let them come back. They swim in a narrow, enclosed spaces in complete darkness, assuming they will see the surface again. Because, I mean, I think most of us don't necessarily want to contemplate worst case scenario,
right?
And so you kind of go into things, and I know some friends that I had growing up that were thrill seekers that they were never thinking about what could go wrong, or I could die doing this,
right?
And they just went into it with full confidence of like, I can do this, I'm gonna be fine. And most of the time you are fine,
right?
But all it takes is that one instance where something goes wrong, or somebody, there's a lapse in judgment from somebody, or even somebody who is an expert and has that experience for things to go sideways. What's interesting is that many countries have depth limits and rules meant to prevent these tragedies, but they keep happening anyway. That is exactly what happened in May of this year when five Italian academics entered the water for a research dive and never came back. Rocket Money is a proud and loyal sponsor of Lights Out, and we're huge fans of Rocket Money because who doesn't like saving money? Who doesn't like getting their finances organized? Because, you know, it's so easy to spend money. What's great about Rocket Money, connect all of your accounts in one place, bank accounts, credit cards, investment accounts, you name it. It's the best way to get all of your finances in order. If you're still looking at credit card statements, bank statements, stop doing that. Just get the Rocket Money app. It's free to start using it. It's a great app. It organizes all your transactions. There's custom budgeting. There's custom alerts that you can set up as well. It'll also keep track of all your utility bills and when those come out of your account, which is really nice for managing sort of your cash flow through your accounts.
It always emails me to be like, hey man, you bought those jeans, but you know you got that car payment coming up.
It's the best way to organize everything. It also will list out all of your subscriptions, which, you know, we all have a million subscriptions at this point, and you can see which ones you still want, which ones you want to cancel. And some of those, they can even cancel for you with a few taps on the app. They can also go and negotiate lower bills for you sometimes, which they'll alert you to. All you have to do is give them some account information, then Rocket Money goes out and does the rest for you. It really does save you tons and tons of time, but it will also save you hundreds, maybe even thousands of dollars over the course of using the app. I've been using it for probably 4 or 5 years now, and I wouldn't use anything else. It's just so simple. It's easy. The dashboard's beautiful. Puts everything into a nice visual presentation for you, which I like seeing my money visually. I recommend it to everybody. So if you're not using it, then what are you doing? Rocket Money is a personal finance app that helps find and cancel unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending and helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings.
Let Rocket Money help you reach your financial goals faster. Join at rocketmoney.com/lightsout.
That's rocketmoney.com/lightsout. rocketmoney.com/lightsout.
For Professor Monica Montefalcone, deep sea diving was just another day at the office. She was an associate professor of ecology at the University of Genoa in Genoa, Italy. She was also an award-winning environmentalist who had conducted regular marine research dives in the Maldives for many years. By 51, her research spanned decades of scientific papers on coral reefs, and she was considered an expert on seagrass ecosystems. She never could have imagined that her lifelong passion for marine life would be the thing that ended her own. On May 10th, Monica and a group of tourers boarded the Duke of York and set sail from the Maldives capital, Malé. They were embarking on a week-long journey to ornate and intricate coral reefs surrounding the islands. On the yacht, divers got the high-end experience of exploring the coral islands up close, enjoying seafood dinners, and sunbathing on the top deck. Around 20 passengers joined Monica, along with her daughter, Georgia Somacall. And I do think, I mean, that's part of why I think you might feel so comfortable as to attempt something like these cave dives, because, you know, the environment you're starting out in is sunbathing on a top deck in a tropical paradise. So it's like you're already operating from this kind of relaxed, nothing can go wrong state of mind.
Yeah, you're not just thrown into the danger,
right?
You know, and really, even when you're in the water, I mean, if you have experienced diving, you're not thinking danger at all.
No,
like until danger actually strikes. But yeah, that's a good point. Like you're especially starting off on this boat, you know, you're cruising across these turquoise waters. Like your mindset's going to be probably calm, collected, peaceful,
right?
Which is probably a good place to be before you hop in the water.
Absolutely.
You know, you're like shaking.
Oh my God, I'm fucking scared.
Yeah, then you probably shouldn't go diving.
Georgia was just a 22-year-old student at the University of Genoa studying biomedical engineering and had logged around 500 dives with her mom. Like they are
super impressive.
Super impressive. Very experienced, both of them. She was just about to taste the freedom of true adulthood. The mother-daughter duo was intimately familiar with ocean exploration, and they were very close in and out of the water. Joining them on the excursion were their friends, fellow Italians Federico Gautieri and Muriel Audinino. Frederico was a 31-year-old marine biologist and a master's graduate. He had recently completed a thesis on corals in the central Maldives under Monica's supervision. Muriel, the same age as Frederico, was a fellow researcher working with Monica at the University of Genoa. This was a tight-knit group who trusted each other deeply and had spent years working side by side. A fifth person joined them that day, Gianluca Benedetti. And Gianluca was the boat operations manager and diving instructor for the Duke of York. By the time he was 44, he had lived in the Maldives for 7 years and was an experienced professional diving guide. He would assist the group on their fateful ride to the abyss. And, you know, I started out by saying, I'd go with someone if they have their 10,000 hours or whatever. These people basically have their 10,000 hours. Like, this is the most experienced group you could have.
Of divers, but right. As we'll see, what about cave diving?
That's a different beast.
Because that's a completely different world when it comes to right. diving, it sounds like. You know, in preparation for this episode, I listened to some commentary from a very experienced cave diver, and it was very interesting and eye-opening to hear his perspective on this story, because just going through all the complexities and all of the, you know, even just the different tools and supplies and equipment right. that you need to go cave diving safely is completely different from a traditional dive, even for divers that have dove deep before
right.
and gone to, you know, deep depths. But it's a totally different ballgame once you enter into this these enclosed spaces.
I mean, especially just considering, like, yeah, you might have gone extremely deep and you're relying on your equipment to keep you alive at those depths, but imagine those depths and you might accidentally tear or damage something on these incredibly skinny cave walls.
Or get lost.
Right, literally.
Like, that's the thing, and we'll talk about that more here in a bit. Guidelines, that will be the big thing that we talk about later on.
All five divers had years of experience, not only in sea exploration, but specifically with diving in the Maldives. Ahead of the trip, the Maldives Research Center had approved a research proposal from Monica, Frederico, and Muriel. In it, they proposed their main goal was to study soft corals near the Vavu Atoll and gather data on the effects of climate change on biodiversity. The holes in that proposal would lead to distressing questions that may never be fully answered. Monica had been coordinating a research project with colleagues leading to the group scheduled dive off the yacht. According to investigators, the university and Maldivian authorities were unaware that the group would end up in a dangerous cave nearly 200 feet below the surface. It appears that entering that cave either went far beyond what anyone expected or was never part of the plan at all. On the morning of May 14th, 2026, the five Italian divers were getting ready to enter the water for the second time that day from a small dive boat off the main vessel. Their first dive that morning had gone smoothly, and they were eager to get back into the clear blue water. The group was reportedly briefed on the dive around 11 a.m. and suited up to plunge into the ocean. They were headed towards Alimatha, a popular dive site in the Vavu Atoll, about 62 miles away from Malay. This area is known for one of the largest continuous coral systems in the country, which made it a prime spot for the research team. At approximately 11:30 a.m., the divers began their descent into the depths. The weather that day was not ideal. Conditions were turbulent, with strong winds and rough seas, but it did not deter the academics. It is still unclear whether the group knew a weather alert had been issued earlier that morning. Either way, the Duke of York continued with its diving itinerary. The other tourists on board descended on the vessel's northern side, while the Italian academics went down the southern side. Nobody watching from the surface realized that this would be the last time the group was seen alive. After about an hour, the larger group of tourists deployed their surface marker buoys and began to resurface. The boat collected them and returned them to the main vessel. By the time they arrived back on the yacht, the planned dive time for Monica's group had already expired. It was a little past noon, and there was no sign of the five researchers in the open water. I think, you know, just for being one of the people on board waiting anxiously, looking out at the open water, it would be bizarre to think to yourself, like, there are these insane cave systems that I can't see. You know, everything looks open, but it's really like a maze once you're down there.
Just the depths of the ocean is so trippy to think about, and just how deep it really gets, and that these cave systems exist hundreds of feet under the water. And potentially these people that came on this boat with me this morning are still down there.
They're still down there.
And something could be wrong. I mean, that just be, and what can you do? You can't even do anything about it.
You just sit on the boat and wait. The crew kept scanning the horizon, waiting for bubbles, buoys, anything that might mark the diver's return. But all they saw were ripples on the surface. The five Italians never came back up. More than two unnerving hours slipped by after the group disappeared below. At around 1:45 p.m., someone aboard the Duke of York finally sent out a distress signal to the Maldives Coast Guard. The military responded quickly and started putting together a rescue plan, still hoping the divers might somehow be alive. Several vessels were sent out to search a wide area of ocean, combing the water for any sign of them. At first, people wanted to believe that the group had simply drifted off course and would eventually surface somewhere else. But as the hours passed with no trace of them, that hope began to fade. Monica and her team were only using standard recreational gear, wetsuits, and single tanks on their backs. At the depth they were diving, that setup doesn't give you much time. The longer the search went on, the clearer it became that their air would have to run out long before. Eventually, the Coast Guard had to accept that a live rescue was no longer realistic, and the mission quietly shifted from trying to save the academics to trying to recover their bodies.
Just knowing that there's a time limit on those oxygen tanks, and now it's well past that, so they know they've definitely ran out of air. And they've already scanned the surface to see if maybe they popped up, you know, somewhere else.
Right.
Maybe they got pulled, you know, farther away from the area where they actually dove in the first place, but there's nothing. And so now the Coast Guard knows, okay, they're likely dead.
Right.
And now we need to figure out how to go and get them. And I'm going to show you where they ultimately end up here in a minute. But let me tell you a little bit more about what the Coast Guard did. So when the Coast Guard first entered the water, there was no trace of the missing group. The reef looked calm. Fish moved in and out of the coral like nothing had happened. Because, of course, the ocean just does what the ocean does. And it's not concerned with humans that are exploring it whatsoever. And after searching for hours with no luck, the team came across the entrance to an infamous cave, Divana Kondu. Locals call it Shark Cave because, like we said at the beginning of this episode, tiger sharks and nurse sharks patrol the area and often hang in and around the cave mouth. The name alone is a warning, and it's meant to make tourists think twice before going anywhere near it. Of course, the nurse sharks are usually harmless. They're more curious and aggressive, but tiger sharks are a totally different story. They're considered one of the world's most dangerous shark species. And this site is also characterized by strong currents and is only suitable for the most experienced technical divers. However, even perfectly experienced professionals dare not approach Shark Cave unless absolutely necessary, given its enigmatic nature. The rescue team was unsettled by the presence of sharks in the water and by the possibility that they were the unruly factor behind the group's disappearance, right? Because that might be your first thought of like, okay, if they went into this area, we know there's a lot of big sharks down here.
Right.
So is it possible that that's what happened to them? But Shark Cave has also never been recognized as a recreational dive site due to its menacing anatomy. Cave diving is considered one of the most detrimental forms of scuba diving. Imprisoning spaces, sheer darkness, suffocation, and depth-related pressure complications can cut a life short in a matter of seconds. So very, very dangerous. It requires not only intensive training, but also psychological preparation to deal with clenching fear, disorientation, and of course, claustrophobia. Because all it takes is one minor issue for panic to set in, and once that happens, the diver is done for. Which that has always been my fear. And what has kept me from wanting to scuba dive is, what happens if I start hyperventilating or panicking? Things get really dangerous quick.
It's a snowball. It's like one thing might go wrong, and then that sets off your head, and then you just kind of spiral. I mean, I also think, like, specifically with cave diving, right? The disorientation is what would get me, because with the regular dive, like, you can see where the sun is. You know when you're going down. But when you're just in these tiny spaces, at a certain point, I would fear that I wouldn't know which way was up or down anymore. And you might just accidentally gather more depth than you ever anticipated.
Yeah, you're truly in a prison.
Right, yeah.
A prison, the worst kind of prison. If you're somebody out there who's struggled with their weight for years and just haven't quite found the solution, you know, maybe you're changing your diet, you're working out, you're doing all the right things, but you're just not seeing the results that you want to. And maybe you've seen an ad for GLP-1s and you wanted to know more. Or maybe you've heard that they're really expensive and a complete pain, or they have horrible side effects, and it's just deterred you from looking into that as a viable weight loss solution. Well, I'm here to tell you about Row. Row is really changing the game when it comes to helping people get matched up with the right GLP-1, because they make it extremely easy to get matched up with a solution that fits for you. Because nowadays, there's a lot of different solutions. With Row, you can find options that are affordable or options that are even covered by your insurance. Because Row, they offer a free insurance checker tool, which we'll give you the link for, so that you can see if your insurance will actually cover your weight loss medication, which is super nice. But Row is a tech-first company, and they make it extremely easy to get connected with a medical provider to see which option might be best for you. You know, maybe you're not into needles. Well, now they have a pill. That's just a daily pill you take. It's super easy, simple. They've got all the different GLP-1 brands out there. There's a quiz that you go through to make sure that you qualify, of course. Then they have medical professionals that review your results and make sure you're a candidate for GLP-1s. But the whole thing is simple. It's painless. It's all done through the app or the website, and the medication just shows up right at your door. It couldn't be simpler. They also offer a multi-month membership option in addition to multi-month medications that help members prepay and save on their GLP-1 medications. And when you become a Row member, you get support throughout the entire process. You'll have access to a provider on demand. If you have any questions or any side effects come up that you need to talk to them about, they're always there for you. Join over 1.5 million people who've trusted Row on their weight loss journey. So go to row.co/lightsout to see if you qualify.
That's row.co/lightsout to get started on Row.
Go to row.co/safety for box warning and full information about GLP-1 medications. Even professionals require specialized certifications and strict conditioning before attempting these kinds of expeditions. The mouth of the cave is over 100 feet below the Maldives' official dive limit of 98 feet, so it's well, well beyond the limits. And at its lowest, the cave drops to a whopping 230 feet, which may not seem like much, but at these depths, every foot can mean the difference between life and death. It's also believed that the cave stretches between 600 and 800 feet into the rock, like a mausoleum, inviting you to venture further in. And when the Coast Guard saw the cave entrance, a sinking feeling crept in that this was a gravesite. It was a massive risk to enter, but there was no other choice, because they were basically out of time, barely holding on to hope that they would find any evidence of the lost group within the dark caverns. And as they cautiously entered the shark cave, they had no idea what to expect. Because as we were kind of talking about a little bit earlier, the cave consists of three large limestone chambers connected by tight passageways. It begins with the first 115 foot long bright cavern and a sandy floor. Upon entering, the light from the ocean slowly fades and you find yourself entombed in pitch black darkness the further you go in. The lack of natural light makes it feel hauntingly barren and otherworldly even, as the enveloping solid rock seems to say, "You're not welcome here." And at the end of the first corridor is the rigid passageway that leads for a second chamber. And that chamber is about 50 feet in diameter with no natural light at all, which can make you feel stressed immediately. Because if all you got is a flashlight, and God forbid that flashlight goes out, I mean, you are in a black hole.
Absolutely.
That you have no idea which way is up or down. And between the two chambers is a sandbank that is critical to this case, because it's easy to swim up over the sandbank into the second chamber. But once you turn around to leave, it looks like from the underwater position in that second chamber, when you look back where you just came from, it looks like a wall.
Right. It's closed behind you.
Because you essentially have to go back up and over it to get back into the first chamber. But when you turn around, it all looks the same.
Right.
So it's almost impossible to know that you came from that direction unless you have some sort of guideline or something telling you that that is the
exit. That's the way you came.
Right. Yeah. That is terrifying to think about. So you all of a sudden feel like you've just been swallowed by this second chamber. And of course, if sand and silt are stirred up in the water, visibility can quickly drop to zero. They call it like a silt out. So there's a certain way that you have to swim through these caves in order to keep the sand and silt from getting kicked up so that you can maintain some visibility. So again, there's lots of ways once you get in these chambers that you can effectively make it much more difficult to navigate.
Absolutely.
And so you have to be extremely careful as you swim through these narrow passages. Experts point out that caves aren't just dark, they're utterly devoid of light. So your eyes can generally adjust to darkness, but in a remote cave, there's really nothing to adjust to. The Italian divers probably had, you know, some type of dive light, flashlights, or torches, but in conditions like that, even a light wouldn't help much, which is just nuts.
Well, and if you're already freaking out, and you might have accidentally gone in here, so you are freaking out, you're kicking up all this sand and silt trying to figure out where to go. Like, it's just a complete nightmare.
Unbelievable. The Coast Guard weaved carefully through the first chamber, scanning the area with their flashlights, but only saw the rock looming around them. One diver headed to the second chamber and spotted Gianluca, clearly identified by his gear. And at this point, they realized they were far too late. By the time they found him, he had been dead, floating in the shadows for hours. With only minutes of oxygen left, the team managed to retrieve his body, but was unable to continue searching for the rest of the group. The Coast Guard brought Gianluca up to the surface at 7:10 p.m., from a staggering depth of 216 feet. And can you even imagine being one of these rescue divers, bringing, you know, Gianluca up from these depths and just wrapping your head around, you've just come across a deceased human, and then also realizing that the rest of them are still trapped inside that cave.
And you almost, as the rescue diver, almost ran out of air yourself.
Yeah.
Like, that's just, I don't know. I really don't know.
And just this whole dichotomy of the fact that there's this awful recovery happening. There's people trapped dead underwater in this cave, and everybody else on the surface is just enjoying paradise.
Pina colada.
Yeah, exactly. It's a complete mindfuck. But when they found him, his tank was completely empty, meaning he would have died gasping for air. It was just horrible. In the days that followed, the team continued searching both in the water and on land for the remaining members of the group. Inside the cave, they noticed there weren't any guidelines, markers, or other signs you'd usually expect during a risky cave dive like this, which was very curious to them. And going in blind with no guidelines is the greatest misstep a cave diver can make, because unfortunately, the academic group didn't adhere to this crucial practice for some reason, and their fatal error led to another tragic death taking place among the Coast Guard while trying to retrieve the rest of their bodies.
So Sergeant Mohammed Mahouthi was a 43-year-old senior military diver who entered the waters on Friday and Saturday to help recover the remaining academics. He was a decorated serviceman, having served for over 20 years and earning the prestigious Medal of Honor. On Friday, he briefed Maldives President Mohamed Maiouizou on the rescue plan. That day, the recovery team encountered numerous obstacles due to bad weather and concerns about the mission's inherent risks. At times, operations had to be completely suspended to keep everyone safe. On Saturday, 8 divers began working in shifts to locate the missing Italians. To expedite the process, 2 divers marked the cave entrance by sending a balloon to the water's surface. This allowed crew members to swim directly towards it and maximize their time inside. That day, Mohammed was working diligently to find the lost bodies when he unfortunately suffered decompression sickness while in the water. His diving partner noticed something was wrong with him as they resurfaced. He was then quickly transported to a hospital in Malay to undergo hyperbaric treatment. Sadly, he died before reaching the hospital. According to his boss, while Mohammed was an experienced diver, he wasn't specifically trained for cave diving. This information hasn't been confirmed, though.
Decompression sickness, often called the bends, is a life-threatening condition that happens when a diver resurfaces too quickly after being deep underwater. The problem comes from a rapid drop in pressure around the body, which can cause dissolved gases in the tissues to form lethal bubbles. It's called the bends because once these gas bubbles enter your joints, it becomes so agonizing that your body can't help but hunch or bend over from the pain. The only way to treat this excruciating illness is with rapid recompression. The longer you wait after symptoms appear, the worse it gets. That's why divers have to come up slowly, giving their bodies time to safely release these gases. Once bubbles enter the bloodstream, the consequences can be fatal. Most people can survive the bends with prompt treatment, but Mohammed and the team were miles away from the nearest hospital. The fact was hard to fathom. They were all at risk of succumbing to the same fate with each dive. Recovering bodies from the caves is often riskier than the original dive. The Coast Guard team didn't have much intelligence on where to look, and the area had already been disturbed by the missing group. Simply swimming around in these conditions takes a lot of effort, especially with heavy gear weighing you down. Every minute underwater adds to the time required to decompress, and any extra movement or labor uses up more oxygen. Decisions in these circumstances have to be exact, and every minor detail counts.
You know, and I think when it comes to the bends, it can take place on just a routine dive as well.
Yeah.
Like, I believe that's what happened to Stephen Colbert even, and one of his ears, he's completely lost hearing in it because of it. I mean, it's the one time I went diving, which was on like a little nothing, you know, that was the most stress they put into anything was like, do not come up too quickly.
And imagine going down to almost 200 feet.
Right.
And so you have to time everything so that you can get, you know, give yourself time to get down there, but also slow, you know, approach on your way back so that your body has time to release those gases. So you don't come up too quickly because you're running out of air. So that you can, you know, hopefully avoid getting the bends. Sounds horrible.
Just horrible. Mohammed was laid to rest the day he died on Saturday, May 16th this year with full military honors. President Maiwizu was among a large gathering of family members, military personnel, and state officials. Mohammed's death, despite his successful background, goes to show just how challenging cave diving is. There has been backlash against the Maldivian Coast Guard for failing to provide cave diving training for military divers. Partly because of this incident, the Maldivian Coast Guard has stated that it is training its service members to dive safely in deep water. After Mohammed's sobering death, the Coast Guard called off further recovery operations. They realized they weren't equipped to deal with this fragile situation. The Divers Alert Network Europe then mobilized a Finnish specialist team of three divers to take over the hazardous mission. The specialists were Sami Pakarinen, Jenny Westerlund, and Patrick Grunkvist. The Divers Alert Network Europe is a nonprofit that focuses on keeping divers safe. When they received the message, the Finnish divers instantly put their regular lives on hold. They left their families and jobs on Sunday to travel to the Maldives to help with the search. It was a truly international effort, with both the United Kingdom and Australia providing specialized equipment to support the team. These Finnish specialists are considered to be among the best divers in the world and are distinguished for their rescue work. Only this time, they weren't in the Maldives for a rescue. They were there to recover what the Coast Guard couldn't. The only information they had was a rough map of the cave and what little details the military could provide.
That's one of the most surprising things to me about this case is the fact that here's, you know, a whole country that has existed for a long time and they've never mapped the cave systems to which people come to visit and dive into.
Right.
And so to hand over a rough sketch, it's literally a piece of paper with like a pencil sketch of the cave system.
It looks like a cartoon character.
Yeah, it doesn't even make sense to me. It's like, okay, this is all you get. We have no idea.
But I think it further goes to show just like how not only dangerous these caves are, but just like how much like unexplored and to the Maldivian authorities, they're like, what's the point of putting people at risk to map these out? Because who's going to go down there anyway?
Right, exactly. And that must be it, is that there's just a handful of people that have even gone down there and gone into those caves. But you think like with unmanned underwater, you know, submarines and technology and drones and whatnot, that somebody would have done that by now, especially that, you know, this infamous shark cave. But that wasn't the case.
No. On the first day, they spent 4 hours on a dive using guidelines to get their bearings, locate the bodies, and then resurface to plan an official route. Just finding the cave entrance took them nearly an hour. Each dive was limited to about 3 hours due to oxygen and decompression limits. Since the rescue operation had already suffered one casualty, they knew they had to take all necessary precautions and use the most advanced gear possible. A standard scuba setup is open circuit, meaning the diver inhales gas from the tank and exhales bubbles into the water. The specialist team, however, used improved closed-circuit rebreather systems, enabling longer, deeper dives. The rebreather system recycles the diver's exhaled breath, removes the carbon dioxide, and automatically replaces the oxygen that's been metabolized. This opens the door for precise control of breathing gas composition. Which, that's amazing. I didn't even know that was possible.
Yeah, I didn't know until researching this episode either that there was even rebreathing systems
right.
like this that can actually pull out the CO2 and then recycle it.
Re-put it back in. That's incredible.
Which honestly. Seems like very critical for dives at this depth,
yeah.
let alone into caves, that you'd need this type of equipment. So remember, the Italians did not have this at all. They just had recreational scuba gear.
And one tank.
One tank.
The recovery team continued to run into challenges over the weekend. The team didn't want to take any chances of losing someone else, but the specialist divers were determined to bring back the rest of the group, no matter how difficult it was. On Monday, they thoroughly surveyed the cave's passages and made their way to the back of the second chamber. After failing to find anything, they turned around and started heading back toward the sandbank that separates the main caverns. That's when they noticed a small side opening nearby. There were marks in the sediment as if someone had brushed it with their fin. They now knew they were on the right track. Following the trail, they found the remaining four Italian divers in a smaller, dead-end chamber, with a nurse shark circling around them. The chamber was like an oceanic cemetery, with all their bodies limply suspended in the waters. The only thing keeping them from sinking toward the sand was their pressurized scuba gear. I mean, just imagine that as a scene.
Oh my God. It's just like, it's hard to even wrap your head around. So, such brave people to go down there and do this and know what you're looking for too.
Right.
Crazy.
I feel like if I were one of the divers, like, to come across their bodies, because they're suspended still, they're not resting upon the sand, there might be a second in your head where you think, like, oh, they're alive.
Yeah.
You know?
True. Yeah. It'd probably be a thought that crossed your mind.
Right.
But then realizing, no, there's no way.
No. At the time they found the deceased group, the team realized they would soon run out of air. They sent a message to the surface to report the discovery of all four missing divers. With time running out, they made their way back up, then regrouped at the surface to plan exactly how they'd bring everyone out. On Tuesday, Monica and Frederico's bodies were recovered from the cave. The Finnish specialist brought them up to 98 feet, where the Coast Guard took over and brought them the rest of the way to the surface. The next day, they repeated the process for Georgia and Muriel. All five Italian divers were deceased upon discovery, making it one of the worst diving incidents in recent history. Once the recovery was complete, Maldivian law enforcement and the specialist team began working together to determine what might have happened during the tragic dive. For some, it brought to mind a similar tragedy that occurred in Utah nearly two decades ago.
Ian, do you know how much you're paying for your wireless bill right now?
No, and it's because my dad is really pressuring me to get off the bill.
Dude, stay on that family plan as long as you can.
I know, but I'm trying, but every week we meet up, he's like, hey man, you got to get off this thing. I'm retired now.
Well, just so you know, Ian, all the big wireless providers out there, it's expensive these days.
You know, Mint Mobile, they have an incredible deal where it's like, you can pay for the whole year. It's like $360. Unlimited data. That's like $1 a day. That's crazy.
That's crazy good. And you're getting access to the same 5G networks that all the big providers, you know, make you pay a premium for. So you're getting the same speeds, reliability, coverage, but you're getting it at a fraction of the price. As soon as I'm out of my contract, I'm going to be looking at switching, because I am so tired of paying multi-hundreds of dollars for subpar customer service, subpar coverage, really. I'm like, why am I paying all this money? And what the big providers do is they like to wrap you up in these contracts. They like to wrap you up in these new phones with these enticing deals of like, come over here, we'll give you a brand new iPhone 16 Plus Pro Max, and you know, we'll lock you in for the next 10 years.
Yeah, and you're signed away.
Yeah, yeah. And then before you know it, you've overpaid for not only your service, but the phone as well. But with Mint Mobile, you can bring over your existing phone and phone number, which is super nice. And the process is seamless. It's easy. You can get an eSIM card on their website, so you can literally switch over to them in a matter of like 10 minutes. It's that simple. You don't have to get a new phone. You don't have to get a new phone number, and you're going to just pay so much less because Mint Mobile took what's wrong with wireless and made it right with premium wireless for just $15 a month. Choose from 3, 6, or 12-month plans like Ian was talking about and say goodbye to the monthly bill, which is really nice. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/lightsout. That's mintmobile.com/lightsout.
Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/lightsout. That's it. There's no catch.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan. Only speeds slower above 40 gigs on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
The divers caught in a death trap are eerily reminiscent of the Nutty Putty cave incident we covered on this podcast some years ago. If you're familiar with this case, you know that a young man in the prime of his life, John Edward Jones, also mistakenly entered a dead-end tunnel that stole his life. He was spelunking with his brother Josh and some friends in November of 2009 at Nutty Putty. Inside the cave, he was looking for a specific tunnel he knew of called the Birth Canal. The twisting veins of the cave were almost impenetrable, but John was determined to explore them. He mistakenly crawled straight down into a squeezing tunnel only inches in diameter. It wrapped around him perfectly. Unfortunately, it was too perfect, because John couldn't move an inch once he dove headfirst into the slender passage. All his brothers and his friends could see were his tennis shoes just barely above the entrance. He remained suspended upside down for 27 unbearable hours. He eventually succumbed to cardiac arrest, widowing his pregnant wife and leaving behind his one-year-old daughter. His catastrophic error of going all in headfirst is comparable to the mistake the divers made in entering the dead-end tunnel inside Shark Cave. Both incidents involved the grave miscalculation of their respective chasms and Mother Nature's unforgiving disposition. The difference between the Shark Cave incident and John's death is that experts still don't know how the divers became trapped in the first place. John wanted to cheat death, while the group of divers were desperately trying to escape it.
You know, when I think back to like the first time I learned about the Nutty Putty cave incident, I probably watched the Lights Out video just because, like, you know, I was scanning on YouTube just because it was so horrifying. Like, this is absolutely the worst case scenario. And I don't know, just to consider like this is that, but underwater with 5 people. I mean, this is just.
It's on a whole other level.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, adding in the complexities of running out of air, which I mean, in the Nutty Putty disaster as well, I mean, similar type of situation when you're just stuck in there, but 27 agonizing hours.
Upside down.
Can't even imagine. It's terrifying. But it wasn't immediately clear why the divers decided to enter the cave, or if they even meant to. While the cave is known for its flora and fauna, many investigators were skeptical about why the experienced divers would take such an enormous risk. It was clear, however, that whether they intentionally entered the cave or not, the group likely became disoriented and was trapped in the dead-end chamber. Pulmonologists have suggested that they could have died from oxygen toxicity, where divers inhale such a great concentration of oxygen that it actually becomes fatal. As you go deeper underwater, the pressure around you rises, and each breath delivers more oxygen into the lungs and bloodstream. If this kind of exposure is too high, or last too long, oxygen can begin to overstimulate the central nervous system and damage tissues. Theoretically, oxygen toxicity starts to occur on compressed air at about 180 feet, and this is one of the most painful and horrible deaths anyone can possibly experience.
I mean, you're getting poisoned to death by air.
Yeah, here's what you got to look out for. It begins with a tickling sensation in your throat, which evolves into burning, scratching torment. Then it transforms into an aching feeling in your chest, eventually being coughing uncontrollably with each breath, becoming tighter and tighter until you ultimately suffocate. Oh my God, sounds absolutely horrible. Investigators have also suggested there may have been some incident within the cave that caused them to get lost, aside from crossing the sandbank. However, there's no way to prove or determine exactly what kind of incident occurred as of right now. It's also extremely likely that they ran out of air after entering the smaller side chamber. The Finnish specialist team speculated that after passing over the sediment into that second chamber, the already dark water became even murkier. This would have left them completely disoriented and ruined their chances of survival, because there you don't know which way is what.
Right,
you're just floating in the abyss at this point. There's nothing. It's also possible that the group thought the side chamber was actually the exit, and once a blinding silt out hit, they couldn't find their way back to the main chamber. Coral reef caves are especially prone to this kind of accident. Just one careless kick can turn the water into a haze within a matter of seconds, wiping out all visibility. And after failing to find the real exit when their tanks were already on limited time, all hope was lost. The specialists also noted that the Italian divers didn't have the necessary type of equipment for this dive, which was very apparent to them. They were especially surprised that there was no reel or guideline in use. Even with plenty of experience, the specialists said they would never try a dive like this without the right safety tools. In the end, most investigators agreed it came down to human error. The dive team estimated the dead-end tunnel was about 164 feet long, making it closely resemble the first chamber. They could have swam quite a way into it before they realized that it was a dead end, and by that point, they had wasted lots of valuable oxygen, which is just horrifying.
I mean, I just imagine your state of mind after realizing we're going the wrong way.
How do you even stay calm in that situation?
I couldn't.
When the group realized they'd taken a wrong turn, panic would have ensued, and this could have made them hyperventilate and waste even more air. This type of panic can send the most seasoned divers into a death spiral. The anxiety would have made it even harder to find their way out, because they're captured in infinite darkness, probably with the full understanding that they'd never see their loved ones again. So it's just like the mental anguish and torment that you're going through in those moments must have been unbearable. But in the end, the team believed the Italians were just 15 minutes from the surface when time ran out.
Just completely tragic.
Horrible. Investigators also observed that the divers failed to follow the philosophy of redundancy. And this is just a diving rule that requires multiples of everything. 2 tanks, 3 lights minimum, 2 computers, 2 writing devices, and so on. It's also likely that they used flutter kicks while in the cave. This type of kick is what most people learn when they learn how to swim, you know, and you see a lot of people when they're kind of casually diving, they use that sort of kick. But cave divers need to use frog kicks to avoid disturbing the sand, because this way the propulsion, you know, from kicking moves horizontally instead of up and down. Because when you're flutter kicking, you're moving water up and down, and you're going to disturb everything on the bottom. Like, if you've ever gone swimming in a lake, a shallow lake or something, you'll know, like, you start kicking up the mud and sediment on the bottom. So if you do that inside one of these caves, you're just going to have a silt out in no time, especially with 5 of you all in close proximity. Things are going to get crazy quickly. So you got to be, it's like such a like art form almost. It's like, it's got to be perfect to be able to go in and get out without disturbing visibility.
Well, and we know they were at least disturbing the cave floor, because they were able to locate marks, track marks that led them to them.
Which maybe they were frog kicking, but they just got too close to the edges.
Right.
I mean, we're talking about some narrow passageways here. But experience can also be sometimes a double-edged sword. After countless successful dives, even the best instructors like Gianluca or Monica may start to trust their instincts a little too much. And this sense of confidence can make it easy to underestimate just how dangerous and complex a cave system can truly be. And it can even lead to seasoned professionals to possibly skip steps or skip essential safety steps, or just take chances they normally wouldn't. You know, there's that overconfidence of like, I've done this a million times and, you know, I'm leaning on my experience too hard, but missing some of just the basic safety checks that need to happen. The Finnish divers also pointed out another major problem. The group wasn't using the specialized breathing mixtures that are essential for steep dives. These gas blends aren't just recommended, they're mandatory and considered an absolute standard in the cave diving world. So here's where the science behind these mixtures becomes critical. Experts believe that the Italians were diving on Nitrox 28, a breathing gas containing 28% oxygen and 72% nitrogen. The partial pressure of oxygen they were using likely exceeded that limit, and this is where acute oxygen toxicity can occur with continued exposure. And even more terrifying, oxygen toxicity hits without reliable warning. Each person has a different level of susceptibility to the lethal illness. One day your body can handle the pressure, and on others, you're finished before you know it. Another symptom is uncontrollable convulsions or seizures when you're nearing the end, which is just also terrifying. Either one or multiple members of the group could have suffered convulsions from this illness, causing them to lose their mouth regulator and therefore drown.
So you're not only having a seizure, you're not only being poisoned by your own oxygen, you can also just drown.
And we know this because I believe they tested this out with military divers at one point. This was one of the experienced cave divers I was watching. Is like, we figured out that at what depth this can occur.
Right.
And what has happened time and time again is that you eventually, once you start convulsing or having a seizure, you just spit your regulator out and then you immediately drown.
Right.
So they really should have been using a special gas mix called Trimix, which is made for deep or technical cave diving. Trimix is a blend of oxygen, nitrogen, and helium, with each part adjusted according to the depth. And helium is important because it helps prevent two major problems. We've got the oxygen toxicity and nitrogen narcosis, with the latter impairing your judgment. In many cases, those affected by nitrogen narcosis will begin to feel drunk and may start laughing uncontrollably. At least if that was the case, it sounds like if you have nitrogen narcosis, that it kind of puts you in this state of euphoria. And if this is what happened to them, it's kind of a comforting thought to think maybe that in their final minutes that they were possibly in a state of euphoria.
But I think, like, say one person has this nitrogen narcosis and everyone else just sees their, like, while they're freaking out, their friend is just laughing uncontrollably, and I would lose my mind.
Yeah. These dangers are much more serious when you're in a cave where you can't quickly get to the surface, and using the wrong mix can lead to terrifying blackouts or even death. That's why Trimix is the standard for serious cave diving, and it's what the Coast Guard and Finnish Recovery Team use during their mission. It's just like so many missteps here.
Right.
And it's like, it's hard to think that, you know, with how experienced they were, they really made these big mistakes and oversights, or did something else happen?
That's what, because, like, I don't know if I could pin this all to just overconfidence and underpreparedness.
Right. It's hard to just, I don't like to think that. I'm like, they must have known what risks they were taking.
Right.
So did they actually go in there on their own accord, or were they possibly pulled in there?
Right.
In some
forced
way?
By some.
Something. Yeah. Yeah.
It's believed that at least one person in the Italian group held a level 1 cave diving certification. Still, this level would not allow them to enter Shark Cave. That type of complex system requires at least a full cave diving certification. Cave certifications aren't interchangeable, and skipping levels is the leading risk factor in cave diving fatalities worldwide. It was also apparent that the group stayed together during their final minutes, likely realizing they were doomed. In some way, it's comforting to know that the majority of them didn't die alone, especially when you consider the mother and daughter, who would have tried to save each other against all odds.
It's just so heartbreaking, yeah. Man.
And especially, like, this is what they did all the time together. This is one of their main ways to bond, you know, and this is the end.
Just the mental thoughts that must have gone through their heads. I mean, knowing that there's no escape, that this is it.
John Luca's exact position in the cave has been debated, with some news outlets arguing he was at the mouth of the cave and others that he was in the second chamber.
I also saw some reporting that he was, like, suspended up at the top against the cave as well, which is eerie as too. I mean,
yeah, just like stuck to the ceiling.
Yeah.
It's likely he left the group to seek help, realizing they were all knocking at death's door. It's important to note that John Luca's cylinder was depleted all the way to zero, which means his death isn't consistent with a convulsion caused by oxygen toxicity. It points to a prolonged struggle inside the cave system caused by a navigational error and frantic, accelerated breathing. Which, that's
not comforting at all.
No.
I mean, that's horrible.
That's my nightmare in this situation.
That, like, once he got in there, he possibly freaked out.
And hyperventilated.
And hyperventilated and died, and they were all turned around and trying to get out.
Right. Some members of the group may have died sooner than others, mostly because of differences in breathing rates. This frantic breathing can drain a diver's supply in a matter of minutes, especially at depth where every breath uses up even more oxygen. Breathing during an anxiety attack can spike to 5 times the normal rate. In a high-stress situation like this, survival can come down to just a few crucial minutes or even seconds. Even if they had realized their mistake and turned around at the dead end, it's unlikely they would have had enough air left to make it back to the surface. They couldn't just swim straight up. They would have had to stop along the way to let their bodies adjust and safely release gases from their tissues. These mandatory pauses can take several minutes each and quickly add up, using even more precious oxygen. With their tanks running low and the added stress of being lost, their chances of survival were almost non-existent. Once they hit the dead end, there was really no way out. A bleak discovery that must have been unimaginable. And I just, even when you're there and, you know, as an experienced diver, you probably do know in the back of your head, like, this is it. I can't do anything from here. I just don't know if I would be able to let go in that way of just be like, this is the end, you know? And I bet it was the same for them.
I don't think it's anything any of us can even fathom. I mean, no. Without being in that position, I don't know how any of us would react or think, or I'd like to think that I would be just like picturing my loved ones and,
right,
you know, kind of just preparing myself for what's next. I don't know though. I mean, God, could go so many different ways.
Right. Or you could freak out.
Or you just freak out. Yeah. And I mean, I think all of us have maybe had some, I'm trying to think of like times where you may have felt like you were drowning or felt like I've gotten,
right,
tumbled by the ocean a few times, just playing in the waves, and where I was underwater a little too long and you swallow some water and then you come up and you're like, oh my God, like
you're startled. Like you feel completely knocked away.
Yeah. Like that, I could have died. I could have, right, been smashed against the bottom of the ocean, broke my neck, or, you know, hit a rock or something. And it's those moments where you're like, holy shit, like that was a close call.
Right.
And, yeah, nothing about this whole situation.
No.
Is something I'd ever want to experience. Man, these days I am just over the grocery store.
I hate it. You know, I just bought some grilled chicken the other week from the grocery store. Not grilled chicken. I meant to say ground chicken. And let me tell you, it was fine, but it didn't look like meat.
I've bought so many steaks from the grocery store meat counter. I bought 3 fillets. It was like $150. And they were thick, but they were so fatty, I could not believe it. So that's why I'm a huge fan of Omaha Steaks. Omaha Steaks has been a staple for years and years and years. You probably heard about it. You may have bought it for gifts before, like I have. I've bought my dad Omaha Steaks packages every year for Father's Day for the past like 5 years. He's always raving at the quality of the steaks, the meats, the proteins. They have sides, they have desserts. They have all these nice little gift packages. I had a weekend 2 weekends ago where all I ate was Omaha Steaks for dinner every night. So Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, I did steak sandwiches with fillets. Absolutely delicious. It was mouthwatering. Then I did some chicken fajitas with their boneless chicken breasts, which were perfect. And then what did I make the last night?
Smash burgers.
Thank you.
As I remember.
Yes. I made delicious smash burgers with their ground beef, and it is succulent. Delicious.
Juicy.
So Omaha Steaks, they got you covered all the way around with all the meats, all the proteins. They make great gift packages as well. So with Father's Day coming up, definitely take advantage. What dad doesn't like? A box of meats. And every purchase with Omaha Steaks is a risk-free win. With Omaha Steaks, 100% satisfaction guarantee. You can order with complete confidence. And you're supporting a family-owned company that practically invented the meat delivery service. So this is a company rooted in tradition and history that is still family-owned, which is hard to say these days. Never settle for grocery proteins again. And this year, get dad the tender, flavorful proteins he deserves for Father's Day. And it's okay to send dad some steaks a little late.
My dad loves a late steak.
Better late than never, uh-huh, right?
Shop the specials and order the perfect gift in time for Father's Day at omahasteaks.com and get $35 off when you use the promo code LIGHTSOUT at checkout.
Terms apply. See site for details.
For trained divers, the realization they were trapped should have triggered a rehearsed response. They should have stopped, established contact with the guideline, and exited by touch following the directional markers. Only they lacked these proper instruments. Their failure to use a guideline was possibly the leading factor in their deaths. There is another theory, however, that the group wasn't at fault for entering the cave. Some experts have suggested that the group was sucked into the cave by a current. The diagram of the cave has experts wondering whether a Venturi effect was created. This happens when fluid must speed up to maintain a constant flow, resulting in a pressure drop and creating a vacuum. Then the water is forced through a narrow opening, creating intense suction. They could have been innocently swimming along, witnessing the beauty of the ocean, when they were unexpectedly snared by the nearby cave. Either the entire group was sucked in at once, or one person was trapped and the rest went in to rescue them. This theory would provide a plausible explanation for why this qualified group of divers tragically died.
This theory sticks out to me as a real possibility for a couple of reasons. Because, I mean, we're dealing with people who are very, very experienced divers, for one. And I just have to believe that they would not have... there was no plans ever communicated to anybody that they were going to go down into this cave.
Otherwise, they would have been provided with all of this, trimix, the guidelines, like all this stuff.
I like to think that they were intelligent enough to know that that would never have been a good idea without the proper equipment, and especially guidelines, the tanks, the mix, the breathing mixes. So to me, it seems like a very plausible theory that something happened when they were down there, and maybe they were nearby the cave. Maybe they were interested in looking at the coral at the opening of the cave or something like that. And this Venturi effect happened, or, I mean, there are sharks everywhere as well. I mean, who knows? Like, something could have happened, or one of them were sucked in and then, you know, they didn't want to split up, so they all went in there. It's just really hard to think that they were all going down there to do like a secret cave diving expedition.
We can't tell anyone
without
else.
The proper.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Make sense.
Especially since, like, we know they already were diving with less, you know, tanks than they would have for a normal dive. Even, you know, they were already taking a risk. If this were a regular dive, I don't think they would have done the extra step to then be like, okay, we can't tell anyone we're going in the cave today.
And we know that the weather conditions were not ideal for diving. So the water was all choppy and turned up. So it seems like it's very possible that something like this happened, where this suction occurred under the water and they started getting pulled into it, or someone got pulled into it and they went in after the rescue them. Then this was just a horrible, horrible, tragic accident that happened because they got lost.
I could see that, honestly. After all, this dive, you know, it far exceeded what was planned for a cruise focused on researching coral at standard depths. However, there is speculation about whether the group had the proper permits to dive deeper than the standard limit to conduct their research. The Maldivian government has said that 3 out of 5 divers did, in fact, have permits to dive to depths of up to 160 feet. Gianluca and Georgia, however, were not on the said permit. Officials have also stressed that the permit allowed deeper research dives, but did not authorize technical cave penetration inside Shark Cave. The University of Genoa has denied authorizing this kind of dive and insists that Monica's team was on a personal endeavor. The group has submitted a specific research proposal to focus on soft corals and the composition of the Maldivian reef systems. The main problem was that the proposal didn't mention a cave. Interestingly, corals need sunlight and wouldn't even survive deep inside the cave, though they could survive near the entrance. This reality could explain the divers falling victim to the Venturi effect when documenting the surrounding corals. The many theories regarding this incident have been taken into consideration during the ongoing investigation.
But the aftermath of this tragedy brought swift legal consequences. The Duke of York, the boat that they were on, had its operating license temporarily suspended by the Maldives Ministry of Tourism while the investigation continues. Because this is an ongoing investigation. This is very, very recent, and so we still don't have all the answers. But when officials reviewed the safari logs and dive briefings, they found no mention of a cave or plans to enter one, which is very important to note that they're... I don't see this group saying that they're going to do one thing and then all of a sudden trying to like secretly go do another thing. It just doesn't seem like something that they would do. Knowing the risks, being as experienced as they are, I just don't see that happening.
Absolutely. And I also don't see a scenario where they're down there looking at the coral and they're like, oh, what if we just checked out this cave really quick? Like,
no way.
No, dude.
Both the yacht and the nonprofit operator, Albatross Top Boat, denied having any knowledge that the divers intended to explore a cave. All the parties involved, the yacht's crew, the university, and the Maldivian government, maintained they had no idea the group was planning such a risky dive. An attorney for Albatross Top Boat claimed that while the company marketed the cruise, it didn't own the Duke of York or employ the crew. The yacht quickly returned to Italy after the incident. The Maldivian authorities said that they would have lent the support of the Coast Guard or other professionals to assist them if they had known of the group's plans. They claimed they would have been able to give them much clearer guidelines and advice had they known the details of this demanding deep cave dive. The Maldivian government has explained that there were certain gaps in the research proposal. They weren't sure exactly where they were diving or that a cave would be involved, and the permit was valid from May 3rd to the 17th for six different atolls, including Vavu. Certain equipment and the Duke of York were included in the permit. The Finnish team has since handed over the GoPro cameras and other diving equipment recovered from inside the cave that they had on their persons to Maldivian police. So this is, like, I think the most critical piece of evidence in this entire story are the GoPro cameras that they were wearing. Because obviously that's going to provide, hopefully, more answers as to why they went into the cave. Was it on their own volition, or did something happen?
Right.
Investigators in both Italy and the Maldives are focusing on reconstructing the dive itself rather than focusing on a single explanation. Italian prosecutors have also requested the equipment, cameras, and documentation from the Maldivian authorities as part of an ongoing manslaughter probe. Under Italian law, it has been described as culpable homicide-style investigation, which is similar to manslaughter. And obviously, they hope that these devices may reconstruct the dive profile, including descent rates, maximum depths, and gas consumption. So there's a lot of data yet to still be known.
Right. I mean, this is a brand new story, basically.
Yeah. So we're like barely a month out from when this really happened. So my guess is there's going to be some updates that come out regarding what really happened based on the investigation at some point. But the University of Genoa has also assisted by handing over laptops, external drives, and phones belonging to the divers for investigation, because maybe they could glean some more details around what was actually planned for that dive that day. Were they actually talking about possibly, hey, if we get down there and we're near this cave, let's go check it out.
Let's see something.
Or, you know, maybe something else to indicate what their true plans were for the dive. But it's unclear if there were other academics from the university on board. There was, however, supposedly a sixth diver from the university who's meant to join the group. And she decided at the last minute not to enter the water, a decision that most likely saved her life. She has reportedly been helping with the investigation, but there has been very little public information released since this has all happened. But this sixth diver may be the most important witness, and she could help by describing the group's objectives, planning, and decision processes before the descent. So what was that meeting like that morning when they were briefing? What was discussed? And all this just hasn't been released publicly yet.
And, I think another important thing to know is why she decided not to join at the last minute.
Yeah.
You know, was this possibility of the cave dive brought up? She was like, no, I'm good. That's too dangerous.
Good point. Yeah, that's definitely a possibility, I feel. But obviously the GoPros, right? Like, the GoPros are possibly the most valuable piece of evidence in this entire case. And while the group's remains have been repatriated to Italy, the autopsy results could take months to be released to truly find out how each of them died. But diving experts have noted that factors like nitrogen narcosis are difficult or impossible to confirm through conventional post-mortem examinations. And it could be a long time before they know the exact cause of death. But obviously this tragedy stands as a clear example of systematic failure, because there was gaps in communication among the divers and all the organizations involved, with no one having a complete picture of the plan. Unless this was a freak accident and something happened that was totally unexpected, right? But in the aftermath, confusion over who was responsible has sparked a three-way blame game between Italy, the Maldives, and Albatross Top Boat. Maldivian investigators have said they know for a fact that the Duke of York didn't have all of its papers in order and lacked a dive school license even, which...
That's big.
There you go. Yeah. Vessels that advertise or assist clients on diving missions need to have the proper licenses, or they can face exorbitant lawsuits. The yacht's operator, however, has claimed that the vessel was permitted to dive to depths of up to 98 feet, He insisted that the group was briefed on the dive limit before their descent. The University of Genoa also maintained that it hadn't authorized the deep sea dive as part of its official research. So they're really like, we had nothing to do with this.
Right.
There was nothing that we asked them to do that would have made them need to go down that far. In fact, the university had suspended permissions for scientific diving altogether back in March 2024. And Monica was well known to the Maldivian government. She had published at least 34 underwater studies in the country since 2006 and received numerous dive permits from both the university and the Maldivian government. So she very, very experienced in these waters,
right.
And has done a lot of work in these waters. And so, you know, it's just really hard to imagine that she would possibly even like jeopardize her own reputation and career and all this work that she's done to do something that, frankly, is illegal.
Is illegal and unnecessary for the scope of research they were attempting to do, you know, and she's with her daughter.
Right. Yeah. It's just absolutely insane to me to think that they would have taken on these exorbitant risks for what?
Right.
And when they know better than anybody how dangerous cave diving is, it's just, something is not adding up here. There's some piece of information up around these events and what truly took place under the water that we just don't know yet.
Right.
And I really, really hope that they, you know, whether or not we actually see the GoPro footage, which, you know, I'm very split on because part of me out of curiosity wants to see it and see what happened. But part of me also, for their sakes and their family's sakes, you know, maybe that shouldn't be released to the public. But
right.
at least some of the information that clarifies the events leading up to their deaths, I think, would be interesting to know.
Absolutely. And I mean, who knows if we'll see it anytime soon, if it's also about to be a criminal investigation.
Right, right. Or is it even recoverable, too?
Right.
We still don't even know. I mean, at those pressures and depths, I don't know if GoPros... What are GoPros certified for depth-wise? I'm curious.
I think they're pretty good, honestly.
I think you can take them to, like, fucking bottom of the
really
ocean.
Really far.
Almost.
So a standard modern GoPro is up to 33 feet or about 10 meters right out of the box. But if you want to go scuba diving or something like that, you have to get, like, a specialized waterproofed protective housing on it. Which is rated up to 60 meters, which is about 196 feet. So it's likely they were using one of those.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting.
So that's right on the edge then.
Right.
You know. So Monica had also sampled sediment from the bottom of the ocean floor in the Maldives at depths between 210 and 270 feet, which is much deeper than the Shark Cave. She was a meticulous diver, which is why her husband, Carlo, has been so vocal about the mystery surrounding her death. Carlo has asserted that his wife would never put others or her daughter's life at risk. He believes that their deaths were caused by a freak accident and has told the press his wife was one of the best divers on the face of the earth. He estimated she had completed around 5,000 dives. Carlo has also been highly critical of the university's statement that the cave dive was unauthorized. According to him, Monica was the person with the most scientific literature on Maldivian corals in the world. Given all the students and faculty who worked under her guidance, he finds it unbelievable that the university was clueless regarding the mission's details. Carlo also shared with the press that Monica had survived the 2004 Boxing Day tsunami while diving in Kenya, an ordeal she only survived because of her remarkable technical skills. To him, Monica lived two lives. One above water and one below, each defined by her expertise and passion.
I mean, that speaks to her level of experience.
Right.
Immensely. I mean, to survive a tsunami, diving to deeper depths in the Shark Cave. I mean, she was, you know, about as experienced of a diver as you could possibly be.
Absolutely.
Cave diving, not so much, but as from a diving perspective, I mean, she had every right to be at those depths.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's just... I'm with Carlo. I think there is something that we're just missing from this.
Yes.
For why they ended up in the cave. And it is interesting that he also points to the university, you know, and saying like, it's unbelievable that they don't have more details around this when they're working in conjunction with each other.
Well, and I bet it's because the university also knows, because there were faculty and students with her. It's like, we don't want
they're like, we don't want anything to do with this.
Absolutely. He also spoke about Gianluca, describing him as extremely detail-oriented and someone who always double-checked everything. Carlo insisted he was not a fool. The high level of competence and experience that both Monica and Gianluca brought to every dive has led many to wonder how these seasoned divers could have ended up in the cave in the first place. Speculators continue adding to the whirlwind of unconfirmed theories. Greenpeace Italia said in a statement that the organization would miss Monica's professionalism and advice. They noted the special light she had in her eyes when she spoke about the wonders of the sea.
But Monica and Giorgio's funerals were held in Genoa, Italy, with about 2,000 people attending. I mean, that's a lot of people that were touched by them. University students and professors joined Carlo and Monica's son, Matteo, to mourn the devastating loss. I mean, this is a family that's torn apart from this horrible, horrible tragedy. The mother and daughter were prominent members of the community and were incredibly loved. President Sergio Mattarella awarded the Finnish specialists the Order of Merit of the Italian Republic for their heroic recovery effort. And the specialists said they didn't see themselves as heroes and they were only happy to help. I mean, what incredible people.
I know.
These cave diving specialists from Finland are, I mean, unbelievable.
Like on the flip of a hat, you know,
yeah, they
were ready to go.
Drop everything, hop on a plane, jump straight into danger,
right.
Risk their own lives to retrieve these Italian divers. Unbelievable. Their travel and equipment costs have been covered, but they refused additional compensation for the recovery efforts, which is very noble of them. The disaster highlights the fact that the ocean is just indifferent to human beings. I mean, when you enter in the ocean, you're entering a foreign world.
Right.
And so oftentimes I feel like a lot of us are like, I'm not meant to be in the water.
I'm not. It's similar to being in the air. I'm not supposed to be
it's
here.
Like, we got feet for a reason.
Uh-huh.
Planted on the ground.
And lungs.
Yeah, exactly. We can't breathe underwater. So why are we diving underwater? It you know, it's just this unknown world. It's like,
right.
It's a fascinating place. And I see the intrigue to it, but yeah, it comes with its risks, right? And it is the single worst diving accident in the history of the Maldives. In total, 6 people died because of this dive, including a Maldivian military diver who lost his life trying to bring the Italians home. And this disaster also serves as a reminder that even luxury destinations can carry fatal ramifications for adventure travelers. Carlo and other family members continue to wait for answers. He has stated that even the experts don't have definite answers, but are merely making hypotheses. So there's a lot of talk and chatter amongst, you know, experts about what they think could have happened,
right.
And, you know, definitely, you know, blame going on. But still, it's just a waiting game at this point until we get more information and I think unlock that video footage if it's recoverable from the dive,
right.
To truly know the answers.
Because I think any additional theories are just going to be a part of that blame game, right? Someone's going to say one thing to kind of assuage blame from themselves and push it on to someone else. So we have to wait for the concrete proof of what actually took place.
And the loss of Monica and her team underscores that even the best divers can face mortal challenges, particularly in unfamiliar environments like underwater caves. So again, this story is just really a reminder of the importance of preparation, clear communication, and just overall respect for the ocean's limits. I mean, it's just anything can happen. I mean, there's things that are beyond our control. I mean, the ocean is just such a powerful, you know, I like to call it like an entity. It's like this living, you know, organ. It's the largest living organism on the planet. You know, like if you believe water is alive, I think everything within the ocean is alive, and it's, you know, it's a place that you have to respect and you have to, you know, come prepared for.
Because right.
I mean, you can go boogie boarding and something can go happen. You can go surfing, something could happen. You can just take a swim.
You could just be on the sand.
You could be on the sand. Like, yeah. I mean, there's so many things that can happen, and it's just, and sometimes it's, there are these freak accidents that occur, and sometimes it's just, you know, there's nothing you can do. And it's just
right.
Part of being a, you know, a living human on this planet is just it, sometimes Mother Nature, you know, it just has other plans. But again, it's, I think it'll be really interesting to see what comes out from here. We'll definitely, you know, post an update on this video. Once we have some more updates, we'll keep following, because I'll be very interested to see if they release any sort of analysis from the GoPro footage,
right.
And any other details that they're able to come up with. I mean, they're investigating this very, very thoroughly, taking it very seriously. Because, I mean, for the family members' sakes, I mean, they want to know, you know, if there's more to know about what happened here, I think they probably would want to know.
Absolutely. Especially just that complete mystery when we're dealing with some of the most experienced people in the world for this, you know, what would have led them to make the decision or force them into the cave? I think that's the main question that needs to be answered.
Are we all three in agreement that we think that something must have happened down there, that they didn't go into this cave willingly? Or do any of us think that maybe they did go into this cave willingly and got turned around?
I really think it has to be an accident. I mean, there might be a part of them that was like, hey, let's just check out the opening. And then they got lost, you know? But even that seems kind of far-fetched to me. I think this Venturi effect is the most captivating theory for me personally.
What do you think, Danny?
I agree with that. I think it would just make the most sense. They seem like experienced divers and they knew the risks of going into, you know, cave diving. So I think they would have tried to avoid it at all costs. I mean, I think something definitely went wrong and they may not have reacted to it how they should have. Maybe someone should have gone up and tried to get help. I don't know. I'm not a diver. I don't want to be a diver.
Yeah.
I get freaked out in just being in the ocean. So, but no, I definitely think the Venturi effect had an effect here and it was more of an accident they ended up there than their intention.
I think the one thing though that tears me from it is the fact that they had the one person who did not join them, the sixth diver.
Yeah, it's interesting because it does kind of, I mean, which makes sense why theories are running wild because, you know, there are these weird things that have come up, like you just said. Was there something discussed that morning? Was there talks of like, hey, we're going to be in this area near this cave. If we come across it, do we go check it out real quick
right. And
make it this like quick little thing? Another possibility that popped in my head was like maybe one of them went into the cave, or which is hard to imagine being so experienced. Like,
yeah.
I know you got to stay in a group. Like that's part of the safety aspect of it. But did one of them venture off? Did one of them get sucked in?
Right.
Did they, and you know, could they have encountered something under the water, you know, predator of some sort, you know, that maybe they were trying to get away from, or just, I don't know. There's so many possibilities that could have happened. I think I get why people are speculating, but I think to just immediately go and cast blame on them is the wrong move here. Agreed. That I think they have enough experience and, you know, resumes that back up all the things that they've done, all the dives that they've done, that I am not going to go that way until I know otherwise, you know, until there's concrete proof that says they made a fateful decision to go into this cave on their own. I'm not going to think that that's what happened. I think something happened that caused them to either be sucked in there or they went in there and that was not part of the plan.
Right.
And unfortunately they got turned around in there. It just doesn't seem like something that they would have done. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see what happens here and if more information comes out. But definitely, and let us know your thoughts. What do you think happened to the cave divers? Do you think they went on their own accord or did something happen under the water? Let us know in the comments if you're watching on YouTube. We appreciate you for being here. If you enjoy Lights Out, make sure you're following or subscribe to us on whatever platform you enjoy the show. Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, you name it. We'd appreciate it. We'll be back next week with another one. Thank you for being here. We'll see you next time. Lights out, everybody.